Structured products have come a long way. From a specialized exotic investment tool, they are now mainstream, and financial advisors are more comfortable about investing in them on behalf of clients. In this fourth podcast with the Investec Structured Products team, Yapi Libba returned to the platform, this time to talk about the Global Accelerator, which tracks a basket of world equity indices and offers an accelerated return if that basket closes up to 40% higher, while offering downside protection as well. Welcome to another episode of the Ghost Stories podcast. It's so nice to be doing these with the team from Investec. They really put together some pretty fascinating structured products, and we have another one here for you today. It's a familiar voice if you've been listening to these Investec appearances on Ghost Stories, and that is the voice of Yapi Libba, who has got tons of experience in this space. Always really cool to learn from him about these products. And I must say, on a personal level, I've thoroughly enjoyed all of the podcasts that I've been doing with the Investec team. I think all of these products are just so interesting. It's a classic case of financial engineering being used to create some really interesting potential outcomes for investors. So Yapi, thank you so much for coming back onto the platform and I suppose entrusting me with helping you describe what you're up to. It's really nice to have you.
Thank you.
So this new one is called the Global Accelerator, which is not a reference to Ferrari's rather lucky recent break. It is instead a reference to another pretty interesting product that you guys have put together, and obviously we'll dig into it in detail. But I think what, you know, the first thing that struck me when I had a look at the documentation on this particular one is that it is a basket of world equity indices. So for example, we had Brian on recently to talk about a Nikkei product in Japan, and this is a whole basket of world indices. So I'm keen for you to take us through not just the different weightings and what's in there, but also how you arrived at each weighting when putting this product together.
Yeah, so thanks. What we do in this structure is that we target 100% capital protection in dollars over a 5-year, and we target upside to equity markets. Now, we have a look at what makes up the MSCI world in a normal see-through basis, and you're typically looking at the S&P 500 being 65%. And then there's a whole portfolio of other indices with lesser weightings. Our view, and Investec Wealth's view, is that the S&P 500 is quite stretched in its valuation. So it's hitting new highs. Last night, again, hit a new high in the history of mankind. And so we allocate a portfolio that tracks 94% the MSCI World All Country Index, but it underweights the S&P 500 to a weighting of 40% and ups the weighting of the Euro Stoxx 50 to 25 and also ups the Nikkei slightly to 15, but retains 10% to emerging markets and 10% to the UK FTSE 100. Very importantly, the index composition is 94% correlated to the MSCI world. When we look at the payoff of this, you'll see that we're going to provide 140% gearing on the positive performance of this index up to a cap of 40. So if we're getting the weighting slightly wrong because history shows that we should have had the 110 more or the other one 5 less, it really won't make a big difference because you've got 140% of whatever the basket does. So in the case of this type of payoff, you don't want to use one index only because one index is much more volatile than 4 or 5 indices. So when you're buying upside to a market using, you know, call options like we do, you want a diversified portfolio so that you're getting a strong upside potential from buying the options on those markets.
It's incredibly interesting, right? So it's kind of, it's like a world equity product with a bit less US. So it's almost a bit more world, a little bit less S&P 500 than you're otherwise getting when you go and buy one of these indices. And I guess what that helps with is a problem that a lot of investors are facing right now where they are very overweight, the sort of Magnificent Seven kind of stocks, which is great when they've been magnificent. It's not so great if they aren't. So I think as investors understand their broader portfolios, I think that's a really nice place that we've started this podcast is just to realize that you're a little bit downweighted here on S&P 500 in favor of Euro Stoxx and Nikkei. And if I understood correctly, FTSE 100 and the emerging market side is kind of in line with what it is in that world equity market index already. And the upside participation, that 140% multiplier, that is really interesting. So maybe let's go to that and then we'll talk a bit more on the downside. So if I understand it correctly, and let's make sure I do, if the index is up by less than 40% after 5 years, then there's an accelerated upside calculation. So you actually do better than you would have done had you just owned the index, right? So let's just understand that properly. Is there anything else to it? I mean, is it as simple as that? End of year five, we do a calculation. If the index is up by less than 40%, there's a multiplier effect.
Yeah, absolutely. So what happens is that, let's take an example. This offering comes with 100% capital protection. So there's only really three things that can happen. Firstly, over 5 years, the equity markets can be down, like in 2008-09. And let's say world equity markets are down 40%. Now, our investor gets 100 back in dollars at the end of 5 years, albeit that the market is down 40. So if that was the case, then you would take your $100 and you'd buy the market the next morning priced at 60. If you'd had an ETF or share portfolio or a unit trust linked to world equities, you would have been looking at a statement plus minus 60. If you got positive alpha, you know, that thing we all chase, then you might have been at 62. If you had negative alpha, you would have been at 59 or 58, but roughly 60 because the whole market's at 60. So the back end benefit of this share is that you get this capital protection. Now, you can buy protection. Any investor can buy protection, like you're buying car insurance or household insurance or medical aid. And that would cost you, in the context of 5 years on world equity, 11% premium upfront. So to simulate what we're doing here, imagine if you wanted to get exposure to the world markets, I'd say to you, you can do that. And if you don't want to lose, pay away 11% on day one. That would have the consequence, though, that you'd only get 89% of the upside, because you can't get the insurance if you haven't paid the premium upfront. Much like you can't leave the garage without having paid the first month's premium in case you crash the car on the way home. So coming to this situation, what we have is that we've worked out that it's very inefficient to take 11% of your money and pay it like you traditionally do on other insurances. But if you think of it from an investor's perspective, most investors on this podcast would accept that they probably take out medical aid. They probably take out household insurance. They probably take out car insurance and possibly life insurance. Now, if we add to that their investment portfolios, which is the one I think they need for retirement, why is it that we're prepared to insure the other four, which are critical to our lives, but we leave our investments naked? What if we have a problem in the world, and we've had some before, and the whole lot goes tumbling down 40 or 50%? Okay, then we wipe out money that could have taken us decades to build. So our logic here is to say, like you do with these other things that are important to you, invest in something where if the things go wrong, at least you're okay. Now, that's the first scenario, is that things don't go okay. The second scenario, which is probably the more probable one, is that because interest rates are quite high in the world as we speak, lots of consumers and businesses are under pressure for the interest charge that the banks are charging them. So that means that the natural growth and the funding and the available cash to those investors and corporates would be sort of limited. That's why we don't think that the equity markets will do massive numbers. It might be okay. So what you want to do in such a scenario is not only get one for one in what the equity markets are doing, and we'll talk through, we orchestrated such that you get 1.4 times what the market's doing, so that you get to index cap of 40, where we put our cap, our limit on the performance of the index. So what happens is, whatever the market does, if the index is less than 40, the investor gets at a propensity of 1.4. So if it did 20, they'd get 20 times 1.4, which would be 28. And if it did 30, they'd get 42. But it maxes out once the market gets to 40. So if it did 40, you got 56. Now, our argument here is that the likelihood that the actual market will do more than 56 after 5 years is probably not that high, if the starting point, all markets are at all-time highs. And secondly, the drag factor on consumer spend and the drag factor on corporate profits is probably going to be quite significant because of this higher inflation, higher interest rates. But our investors only include this in as a portfolio asset, as part of the portfolio. So you'd be very happy, everybody in life would be very happy if the markets actually did 60. You would be loath to complain that you only got 56 in US dollars for 5 years. That's the point, is that the investors in this part of their money want to make sure that they don't lose the capital, firstly. Secondly, that they get a geared upside to the equities up to a reasonable limit. And interestingly enough, if you look at the very long term of world equity, if you exclude the dividends, which you do in option pricing, 40% is about the long-term average of world equity. So it follows that if the investor wants to make 70%, 80%, 200%, you really have to buy single stocks, but you just got to know which ones to buy. I want to mention another thing to you. In the allocation of 40% to the S&P 500, we have the advantage that because we're not buying the individual shares, the Magnificent Seven today might be a different Magnificent Eight in 2 years' time, but the index will always represent the best performing stocks. So you de facto always get the best ones, and if they fall out of bed, unlike a fund manager who's now got it as a big weighting in his portfolio, this one just gets a lower weighting in the 500 stock index. And then in case the entire systemic world comes apart at the seams, you get your $100 back. So you've got double protection. But on the upside, because you still retain all the best shares because they're the highest weightings in the indices, and you've got 140% geared upside to whatever they perform, you know, you're sitting in a very favorable position.
Yeah, I love that. I love that concept. I mean, it's a very good point about buying the index, and it might become the Magnificent Six if I'm right about Tesla. So I guess only time will tell on that, Yapi. But I mean, you make all the right points there. And there's something that we need to pick up on, which is this is a dollar-based return, or as long as I understand correctly. So let's make sure on this. You're looking at a dollar-based index, so you're measuring a dollar-based return. So let's assume it hits the 40% and you get your 56% because of the accelerator part of this. You know, again, that's in dollars. So the worst thing that can happen in this product is in 5 years' time, you get back all of the dollars that you originally put in. Who knows what that's worth in Rand? I think few people would bravely say that the Rand will probably do a whole lot better over the next 5 years. I mean, we can only hope, because I think all our lives in South Africa will be better as a result. But, you know, hope is not a strategy, as I always say. So I just want to confirm that that's correct. It's a dollar calculation, not a Rand calculation. And so your Rand return would effectively be whatever happens to the US dollar Rand exchange rate over that period until the 5-year snapshot view.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a pure dollar investment. And in fact, it goes further, because the returns are 40% allocation to S&P, 25% to Euro stocks, et cetera, but all the calculations are in US dollars, okay? So whatever those percentages are, you just times those percentages and come back to a dollar return.
Got it. It really is super interesting. And there's another point you raised earlier, which was around dividends. So I just want to make sure that listeners understand this. So what actually happens with the dividends that gets paid on these? Because if I go and buy an index ETF, I would get a dividend flow through, right? So I think let's just understand what the difference is here.
Sure. So if you buy an ETF, you get the dividends. And at the moment, the dividends on the MSCI World are running at about 1.7%. That's about the percentage that you would get. Now, if you got the dividend, you'd have to pay 20% tax on the receipt of the dividend. In the world that we live in here with structuring, the dividends are forfeited because the pricing of the Black-Scholes pricing model gives a credit for the dividend. But it's just a credit for the amount of the dividend. But you don't physically get the cash of the dividend. But in lieu of that, what you're getting is you're getting this 100% protection, which, as we said, would cost 11 if you had to buy it at as a premium. The total dividends for the period won't total 11. So even if you got all the dividends, you still wouldn't have 11, which would be enough to buy protection. That's the first thing. The second thing, let's assume the dividends for 5 years compound and equal a number of 8. If the index did 20, the basket that we've selected, and you had 1.4 times that, you'd have 28. So you'd be indifferent between having owned the market at 20 plus 8 dividends to getting 28 on the price of your share. But now you've got that 28 without having to have taken the risk. So let's understand clearly, if you buy the ETF, you do get the dividend, but you do take the downside risk of the index. So let's assume the market goes down 40%. The person who bought the ETF would still lose 30, or 32 to be exact, because they'd go down 40, but they'd soften the blow by the dividend receipts of 8, but they're still down 32. If that same scenario played out here, this investor just gets their $100 back. Okay, so on the upside, the dividends are always important because you'd always get the market plus the dividend of a fixed amount, 7 or 8, whatever, 9, whatever it compounds to, but you're only getting 1 for 1 what the market's doing. Okay, so our argument is it's better, commercially better, to get the returns without the risk, because otherwise you'd only be able to get 89% of the upside if you had had to pay away 11 to protect the 100. Now you're getting 100% of the upside. But that's how it works. The dividend is forfeited because it's taken into account in the calculations when we price the options with the banks. And so we are getting the credit for it. We're just not getting it in cash flow purposes. We're getting it in geared upside to the performance of the market.
Yeah, it's incredibly interesting. And a lot of it comes down to the actual structuring of it. And all of this is available in quite a detailed document that I know we'll include with the show notes when this goes out. But I think last time we spoke, Yapi, I think we went into quite a bit of detail of the underlying structure of the investment and how you guys actually do it. And I think that transparency is appreciated by those who sort of understand it a little bit more. So I think without spending too much time on it, you know, because it is very complicated stuff and it's not necessarily appropriate for every listener, but maybe just high level, you know, the credit link note, the call options in this thing, just super high level. How does it actually get structured and packaged to give this very cool outcome, you know?
Yeah, sure. So what happens is, firstly, structurally, this is a Guernsey company listed on the Bermuda Stock Exchange, and the investor buys a share in that company. The actual company's existed for many years because it came from way back, you know, 15, 18 years ago. But the shares are structured so that they have a finite life. This finite life is going to be 5 years, and the investors who come in now will typically put in $100. So calibrated per $100, we're going to take 74.5 of the 100 and buy a note, a credit link note from Bank of America. It's actually going to be Bank of America. We've decided that. And this note will reference 1/3 each the risk of Barclays, NatWest, and Standard Chartered, the tier two debt of those banks. But all the paper, those bonds plus Bank of America, is all investment grade paper. So in other words, the credit ratings of this debt is much higher than even our SA government debt by some significant margin. Now, that 74.5 will grow to 75, 76, 77, and mature at exactly $100 in 5 years' time inside that company. And unless the Bank of America or those bonds default, which if you look at the probability of default, if you put the four together, Bloomberg has a system that you can go into, it's rated as less than 1% chance, according to the current ratings of this debt, that it's likely to default. So fairly low probability because it's investment grade international banks. Now, secondly, we put aside for the 5 years of fees, costs, and expenses. That's 0.6 for the distributor, the sales guy, 0.6 per annum for us, Investec Capital Markets, plus the lawyers and the auditors. And we also pay £1,200 a year for an annual tax exemption certificate in Guernsey. So the company pays, and we've done this for 22 years, so it's no problem. It's how it works. And we pay and we have no tax on the returns of the company inside the company. So just very simply from a fees perspective, the total fees for 5 years is 7%, roughly 1.4 per annum, which you'd appreciate if you look at the total expense ratios of unit trusts. This is cheap. Plus, if you as an investor wanted to just protect your 100, you could do it yourself at night on Interactive Broking, but it'll cost you 11%. So the total cost and fees and expenses is 7 compared to you pick up the phone and do it yourself and it'll cost you 11. If you do it yourself, you'll only get 89% of the upside. Here you're getting 140% of the upside. So 7 is put aside. That leaves us on day one with 18.5, being the 74.5 plus the 7 is now leaving us with 18.5 to get back to the 100 capital we had. What we do with the 18.5 is we price with 6 big banks. They have to have S&P A or better rating, so huge big US and overseas banks. And we say to them, if we were to buy a call option, so you'd appreciate a call option would give you 1-for-1 upside, and that would cost you currently 17.5. And we say, well, we, from the statistics and the history, and because where the world's at, we don't think the world's going to go by more than the long-term average, which is 40 at index level for indices. So we sell a cap. Day one, we sell the cap at 140, and it gives us a credit of 4.5. So 17.5 less 4.5 is 13. But because we have 18.5 available, we buy 1.4 of them. And it's that simple. Okay, because you've got more money than you need to buy one upside, it's linear and you buy 1.4. So let's quickly look what's going to happen. If the markets go down, then the call option that 18.5 is worth naught. It's like you buy car insurance, you don't crash the car, they don't send you a check. You pay medical aid, you don't get sick, they don't send you a check because you didn't have a claim, eh? You bought a put option. If you buy a put option, you only get paid if you get sick or you crash the car or your house burns down.
It's such a great analogy. It really is such a powerful analogy, and that's exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same in equities. If you buy a call option, which is what we're buying, a call structure, and the market goes down 40, that's when that option's out the money. That's where you've heard that saying, the option's underwater or it's out the money. But we're not too concerned with that, because our 74.5 still grew to 100. If we'd put the money on day one in the shares, bought a portfolio of shares or unit trusts or whatever, ETFs, and the entire market went down 40, we have a horrible feeling in our stomach because our statement tells us we're worth 60 and we can't avoid it. It says what it is. Whereas here, this structure avoids that problem by having the 74.5 just grow slowly, daily, daily through to 100. Now, secondly, if the 18.5, the markets are up, whatever the markets are up by, we times that by 1.4 in accordance with the calculation we've agreed with that bank, and they've got to pay out that money. So let's go to the back end of this deal. 5 years' time, let's assume the market's done 30 for the discussion. Index have done 30 times 1.4. That means the option is going to pay out 42. The bond pays out 100, and the fees have been amortized to naught. They amortize 7654321 naught. All right, now we come to you as the investor and we say, look, you put in $100 5 years ago, equity markets did 30, you're entitled to 42 because that's what your shares are worth now. Do you want to keep your shares or do you want to sell your shares? That's what we're doing for the existing investors who are worth $85 million as we speak. Now, if you don't need the money at that stage, you may say, I want to keep with shares, so I'll keep my share. If you do that, the inside the company, the options have paid out the 42 plus the 100's paid out. Now the capital protection goes to 142. So every 5 years, you deleverage all your equity risk. You take all the equity risk out of your investment because you set a new capital protection level. Here's the argument and why investors like the structure. Because ordinarily, like we are today, people are taking, you know, concern with the fact that they've been in equities for however long. And now these equities have done exceptionally well. But they could crash tomorrow. So you become angst because you're worried. What if things go wrong? Okay. And that's why we spend so much time on the what if things go wrong in life. And it's not good for your health. It's not good for your sense of humor. And it's not good for you as a person. But you can't avoid it. And this is why we say people have worked out in life that if you don't want to be worried about your medical situation, you take out medical aid. You don't want to worry about you're going to crash into this Ferrari on the highway. You insure your motor car. Okay. But now it comes to your investments and we all just leave them naked. It doesn't make sense. It's because people have worked out that that 11% to spend to protect it is a disproportionate cost. And that's why they just say, I'll just go with emotion and just try this and try that. And hopefully by asset allocation and stock picking, I'll sort of mitigate that risk. But here's a key statistic for you. If you look at five-year returns, daily price, daily starting, five-year rolling returns on MSCI World Equity, 23% of the time, the number's negative over a five-year. From 1987 to now, 23% of the time, general equity, MSCI World is negative. It's in the presentation which you'll mail the clients. Secondly, if you look at bonds, investment-grade five-year dollar bonds, 29% of the time, the price of the bonds on negative over 5 years. So that means as a normal investor, if you just allocate money to the market, you've got more than 50% chance that over 5 years, starting any time, either the bonds or the equities or both are down. This is why most investors take 5 steps forward and 4 steps back, because they've got to take these negatives. All right. Now, this structure which we're explaining to you here today, we've done at Investec for 22 years. We haven't had one investor in 22 years lose a cent on any of their capital because the banks we've selected and the credit we've taken have been top-class banks and they've all paid on due date. And just mathematically, the probability going forward, if you look at the bonds we're using, is less than 1% probable of those bonds and those banks defaulting, compared to 52% probability that either equities or bonds will be down. So that's really the thing. So here's where the real juice lies. We call it the chaps, okay? Is the fact that if over 5 years from now, the general interest rates in the market have gone from, let's say, 4% where they are now to 8%. In our case, Bank of America still has to pay the 100. We don't take a capital loss for the fact that interest rates went up. Secondly, if the credit spreads in the debt we're using blow out, in other words, like when there's a problem in life, then a normal investor who bought the high-yielding portfolio would lose money. We don't lose any money because we say to Bank of America, the 5 years is up, you've got to pay the $100 to us. So it's only if Bank of America or any of those reference banks actually physically default, okay, which under the current dispensation we think is not that high probability, because you've got Basel III, you've got quarterly submissions by banks. These are systemic banks to those countries. So we think that that's a less risky. There's nothing in life that has zero risk, but that's less risky than what equities from these levels go down, or bonds. We've seen just in the last 5 years, our bonds can go down. Okay, so in our case, our structure captures the equity risk premium because we're getting the reward of risk of equities without taking the capital risk. You know, the worst a call option can be is naught. Secondly, we're capturing the what we call the duration or fixed income risk premium by locking in the current yields for the 74.5 to be able to grow to 100. And we're locking in the credit spreads because that's encapsulated in the roughly 6% interest rate that we need for the 74.5 to grow to 100. But we're not taking the risk of a deterioration of any of those three assets, but we're picking up all three risk premiums. So it's really works nicely for us. So
I would say to anyone listening to this who's maybe too early in their life to actually invest, but just finds this stuff absolutely fascinating, if nothing else, this is a good lesson that there's a lot more to the world of finance than just some of the basics and learning about the new IFRS rules. I mean, there's a lot of incredibly cool stuff going on in this thing, obviously. And I agree with you about banks in the sort of post-GFC world and the Basel sort of structures. So I wrote an article recently called The Huskies of Wall Street, because I'm not sure they're wolves anymore. You know, I'm still invested in them, but there's not that many wolves running around. They've very much been muzzled. They still do some cool stuff on that side, but it's nowhere near, obviously, what it used to be, which is quite helpful when you're facing them as a credit risk, actually. So the one thing I do just want to touch on, like last point, actually, there's a lot of cool stuff in this. So what are investors giving up? And I guess the one thing they are giving up, I mean, you've spoken to the fees and how competitive they are versus a typical unit trust structure. So I wouldn't put that in the bucket of things they're giving up. I guess it's liquidity. You've got to wait 5 years. I mean, there is no liquidity along the way, or is there potentially some market making activities over the duration?
Yeah, so these shares are all priced daily because the bonds change in price daily and the options change in price depending on equity markets going up or down daily. And so you get an ISIN number like a normal share, any other share in the world, and the shares are priced daily and they're on Bloomberg daily. If the investors want to sell during the 5 years, there are three levels of liquidity. First level of liquidity, John wants to sell and Peter wants to buy. No problem. Transfer from John to Peter. The shares are freely transferable. Secondly, there is no Peter that has said he wants to buy. So what happens in Vestec, we make a market in the shares. We then provide the seller the ability to sell to us at 1.25% below the prevailing price. It's like when you sell your Anglos or your Capitec, you have brokerage to get out. This brokerage is slightly higher simply because we then take it into secondary stock and we run an over-the-counter market in the secondary stock. Now, to give you an idea, on 37 billion of assets that we have on these structures, we have less than 100 million rands value in secondary stock. The third level of liquidity is if we don't want to buy the stock for whatever reason as Investec, then we unwind the assets. In other words, we unwind because the debt was priced at the price that it is physically in the market. The options are provided by JP Morgan or Bank of America or whoever and contracted to be daily liquid. So yeah, you don't have an issue with liquidity. What you do have is you have the possibility that you want to sell in 1 year's time when equity markets might be down 40. If that was the case, your 100's not guaranteed in 1 year's time, because it has to take its time to grow through to 100. Now, what's interesting about this is we went through the GFC, and in the GFC, we had situations where the equities in one of our shares was down over 50%, and our share price wasn't down more than 14. Okay, because think about it. If the market crashes, it's only the option, only that 18 and a half, which is impacted by the fact that shares are going down. The bond is a fixed income instrument, and the cash is physically cash in a bank account. Okay, so that's quite important, is that if there is a big problem in the world, these shares will be buffeted on a daily valuation. Plus, obviously, our shareholders have a nice advantage that they say, well, I check out Bank of America is fine. These banks are fine. So all I do is I sit back and I relax, because when the sun sets on that day, I get my dollars back. Compared to the stress of the guy who's looking at the equities on his statement down 40 and he's 55 or 70 years old, concerned, does this mean I might need to find a job again? The liquidity has been tried and tested, you know, and we've only had four occasions in the 22 years where we've had to unwind the underlying assets. In other words, we Investec didn't want to at that point in time buy those shares back.
Got it. So I think let's finish off with some of the mechanics here of how someone invests. The minimum investment, from what I can see on the document you've shared with me, is $10,000, or interestingly enough, $16,000. I won't ask you too much about why Aussie dollars are on the list, but I think for most South Africans, they'll understand US dollars. So take 10,000 times it by probably 19. But of course, when this goes out, who knows, check what the prevailing rate is. So almost 200,000 Rand is kind of the minimum investment level for this thing. And is that something where investors need to go through a financial advisor? Do they contact Investec directly? Is this something they can do through their broker? How does it actually work in practice?
Yeah, so we have roughly 310 organizations that have got distribution agreements with us to be able to market and sell the shares. If the investor wants to go through an advisor, that's 100% fine by us. The advisor, we need to have them registered with us so that we ensure they have the right phase licenses and FSB approvals. And we also have a facility to buy online. So we've made a provision where clients don't have an advisor or don't want an advisor, that they can buy online. So I would think the easiest, the best is if they just contact us. Our details are in the documents you're going to send out. And then we'll first check whether they have an advisor. If they do, then we'll direct them to their own advisor, failing which they can buy online. If you buy online, obviously you're not getting advice. You're saying, I'll ask the questions I need. And once I'm comfortable that I've answered my questions, you know, I'll just click and buy. The monies that the investors can use is the 1 million allowance, you know, for husband and wife, 1 million annual allowance. They can also use monies they already have overseas, which have to be clean money, previously cleared money. They can also use what we refer to as asset swaps. Asset swaps are where you've got a trust or a company, or you yourself don't want to go to the tax department and get the 10 million clearance, because that's the other major one you can use, is the 10 million per annum. Then you utilize the capacity of Investec or Sanlam or Nedbank, one of the banks. They have capacity, and you provide rands. They convert it for you to dollars. You open a local stockbroking account, and then the shares are reflected on your local stockbroking account. Valuation is no problem. You can see the valuation daily, and they have this huge advantage at the back end, where firstly, if it's a problem, you walk away from the problem by getting your capital reinstated. Secondly, for the majority where the markets have had a reasonably good period, you get an accentuated return via the 140 gearing. Then lastly, if the market's done 70 and you're only getting 56, you have a portfolio of assets. So the others are doing, you know, the 70. But that's really the attributes.
Yapi, thank you so much. It's always so great to chat to you. I think the wealth of experience that you bring to the table in this space just shines through, and the passion you have for this. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. You clearly really enjoy it. And I think it always comes through when you talk about these products. So I think we can safely leave it there. I'll make sure that the notes to the show have got contact details and the documents and whatever else people need. I would just end it by saying, obviously, this is not advice. So if you've listened to the show, you haven't done any other thinking, and this doesn't work out for you, don't come and find me or YRP down the line and be upset. You must always do your own research. But I think this show is an incredibly useful source of information and understanding. Go and read the documents, refer to them. If you have a financial advisor, chat to one. If you feel like you need advice, go and find one. Otherwise, if you're feeling confident and you're happy that you've disclaimed that away, you know, contact the team and check it out. So Yapi, thank you so very much for your time again. And I wish you a successful raise. Oh, perhaps we should end off with saying, when does this raise close? People need to move quite quickly, don't they?
Yeah, so this one, I think it's safe to say mid-May, because it is actually 21 May, but you want to really get your stuff in line in case there's questions and stuff. But mid-May would be a good indication. So sort of 6 weeks, quite a bit of time.
Fantastic. Yapi, thank you so much. I look forward to doing another one of these for your next exciting product. And good luck with the raise.
Thank you.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute advice. You must speak to your independent financial advisor before investing in any product, and especially this one. Investec Corporate and Institutional Banking is a division of Investec Bank Limited, an authorized financial services provider, a registered credit provider, an authorized over-the-counter derivatives provider, and a member of the JSE. T's and C's apply to this product, and you should refer to the Investec website for full details.